You're listening to an Airwave Media Podcast.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
As a longtime foreign correspondent, I've worked in lots of places, but nowhere as important to the world as China. I'm Jane Perlez, former Beijing bureau chief for The New York Times. Join me on my new podcast, Face Off, U.S. versus China, where I'll take you behind the scenes in the tumultuous U.S.-China relationship. Find Face Off wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome to ArcReach's podcast. This is Chris. Super excited about this interview. This one's been in the works for a few weeks. I'm joined with Manda Kalameen. Hey, Manda, how are you doing?
Hi, Chris. How are you?
Doing good. This is a very exciting topic because you're combining two things I really love. This concept of rewilding and horses, wild horses, particularly in the Americas. It's going to be a fascinating discussion because I think it's one of those things that's emerging even in popular press this year, how critical these herbivores are to our ecosystems. And it's something we talk week in, week out about all these species around the planet. And wild horses in America are part of that story. Before we get going, I just want to ask your background. You've done so much wonderful work in your career. Your foundational work and now Rewilding America. If you could just kind of give our listeners about who you are and how you got there.
Oh, you're so nice. Well, first I have to say, thank you so much for having me and for your passion, for your love and your passion for the horses and women and for all the work that you and your podcast listeners do for everybody. Well, I'm glad you asked me the question about myself because it's something that I'm actually most proud about, and it's something that I tell everybody. Who am I? I'm just a gal who has a passion for horses and animals and love them. And I had a situation in my life where something occurred which led me to see that there was a problem. I never realized that horses were going to slaughter here in this country. And when that happened, I said, wait a second, I live in a bubble. I live in this nice little cushy bubble that I have. I have a lovely life. I have two children and I have horses and I ride, and I was very fortunate in that way. But now I'm realizing all of these things are happening outside of my purview. And it bothered me. I said, well, I have to understand that. And I set out to educate myself. And that's really the truth. And I've spent the last 15 years educating myself in every capacity, eating up as much information as I can. I've educated myself in science. I've educated myself in horse history. I've educated myself as to the situations, as to all the varying components to the work that I want to do. I taught myself. And it's something I tell everybody because we all have the capacity to do just that. I'm just like anybody else.
Well, I want our listeners, you know, when they just put this in their ear, go to rewildingamericanow.org. I'll definitely link the website in the show notes. After this interview, or, you know, if you're driving, don't do it, obviously. But when you have time, go to the website, play the video, because it's going to lay out this discussion that Manda and I are going to have about wild horses and what the issues are. Because when we talk about rewilding, we're talking about preserving our ecosystems. So to start this discussion off, what's the status of the wild horses in America today?
Well, not good. How about that? Let's start with that. Not good. So, should we have a little history of the wild horse situation for your listeners?
That'd
I'm
be
not
great.
Sure.
Yeah.
So, wild horses. So, horses here in the United States, everybody knows that this country was built on the back of a horse, as is every other country. In New Zealand, in Australia, in Britain, in France. I mean, tell me what location, Africa, what location in this world was not built on the back of a horse? Horses have been a global species and a compatriot to all of us through civilization, the growth of our civilization. But what's happened here is that horses were not considered a native species in this country. Hard to imagine that's true. Horses evolved here in the Yukon, and they crossed over the Bering Land Bridge, and they circled the globe. And then the same horse that left here came back with the conquistador in 1492. But our government says that the wild horses that are here are relatives, derivatives of the horses that came back with the conquistadors, and that the original horse, that horse is gone and extinct, and that the horses that came with the conquistador are not only non-native, but they are being called invasive, meaning destructive to the range, which is not true. So although our horses here in America are mandated to roam free on the public range lands, the way that the government is managing them is by helicopter, chasing them down, their families, separating families, mothers in full running for their life. Babies can't keep up with their mothers and the families, the destruction of these family bands and herds. And because they need the public range lands to give to cattle ranching people and to oil factions and drilling and mining, as it's a multi-use, our public range lands. So the horses are the ones caught in the crossfire of this argument. And it's a terrible thing because they're being eradicated. There are over 80,000 wild horses in government holding facilities today. There are less than 85,000 left on the range. It's hard to know the exact numbers. The government tells you one thing and advocates tell you another. It's destruction. The range is destroyed by all the use. The horse bands are being eradicated and destroyed. We've got to find a solution and balance to save the land and to save the horses.
Yeah. It is a complicated story because, you know, when we go back to this megafauna in North America, a lot of scientists believe humans drove them to extinction, to the horse and all the other large herbivores that were on the plains. And then we saw it with the buffalo. Buffalo down to 600 animals in 1890s. That was it. After the millions.
But do you know why? Well, our government, that was that was how our government was going to destroy and get rid of the Native American people here.
Yeah.
They set out to kill all the buffalo. That was their food, their mainstay.
Yeah. I mean, and then
horrible people here. Honestly, Australia, I mean, do you know what they've been doing over the last 2 months?
Yeah, I've read stories. It's pretty horrific.
I mean, they're culling their Brumbies, their horses. They're shooting them like a video game from helicopters above. What kind of thing is that? Who does that?
Yeah, you would think in the 21st century, we could be a little bit more modern, and it is frustrating. So, but I think for the listeners too, this concept of rewilding, and I want to preempt this a little bit because this interview was so on topic. There was just a big study released in Science and talking about non-native large herbivores and their critical importance to plant communities. So,
The Eric Lundgren study.
Yes. I saw it. I got so excited when I read it, and then we're getting this interview set up, and I was like, "Oh, this is perfect!" Because I go back to Alan Savory when he went and culled all the elephants in Africa.
Yeah,
yeah.
And I met him.
Yes, I really would love to meet him because I have like a he told them to cull 40,000 elephants, which just is a dagger in my heart. But then, I mean, at least he admitted it was a mistake, and he has completely become a crusader, not only for elephants, but for large herbivores. And so in his story, he was saying the elephants were destructive to the grasslands and were causing desertification and all this. Culled all the elephants, and then they realized, oh, the desertification was increasing because the elephants weren't there. They weren't there trampling, dropping their dung, spreading their seeds, doing what they do. And that's native Africa, right? So now he's become a proponent for holistic agriculture and the importance of large herbivores. Taking that to the U.S., we have no buffalo anymore in our wild spaces, right? So horses kind of help fill that niche?
Well, yes, 100%. Yeah, but let me say this.
Yeah.
There over the last 20, 25 years, and it's amazing to see, it's just wonderful to see that the resurgence in wild buffalo. So many of our Native American communities here have been engaged in projects to build out herds of wild buffalo. So many of them. And it's really so many tribes are doing this, and it's great. Mm-hmm. It's great. One of the gentlemen that we're working with, actually, you can see him in the video. He has the largest buffalo rancher in South Dakota, native mm-hmm. buffalo mm-hmm. rancher in South mm-hmm. Dakota. Mm-hmm. And he's mm-hmm. growing buffalo in a traditional way. He wants to feed his people. He wants to feed the people of Standing Rock with his buffalo as it was in the day and bring that value, that nutrition back in, and bring that value and that nutrition back as it once was. And this gentleman says, of course, we need to have horses with the buffalo to be wild and to grow grass. So the buffalo are coming back.
Yeah.
And actually, some of the people through my visit with Alan Savory, some of the people that they're working with through their methodology are branching buffalo here.
Good.
So that is happening, but it's our struggle and our mandate here at Rewilding America Now for people to understand that wild horses play an integral role in the natural system, just as the buffalo do, and maybe even better, right?
Yeah.
Each keystone species has their own role, and horses, because of the way they are, because of the way they're able to travel and go to places that buffalo and cattle can't, that they are such an important keystone species, mega herbivore, as you call them.
Yeah, it's interesting. Yeah, you think about it, where buffalo roam, and then where the horses can go, and how they help shape these ecosystems. Working with all these people in the Americas, what's the environment look like now? If you can paint a picture, because we have listeners all over the world, you know, in Africa, in Asia, in Europe. What's it look like? Because we have this idea of the iconic West, the cowboy on the back of a horse, you know, driving their cattle or looking at the buffalo roaming. What's it actual look like today?
Okay. The West, as it always has been, is an incredibly beautiful place. It mm-hmm. is incredibly beautiful. Even in its worst day, it's overwhelming. Mm-hmm. It's just overwhelming. One of the things that makes us so great here in the United States, the land so great, is that it's so vast. It's so vast. Other countries don't have the kind of land we have here, mm-hmm. or the public lands out west, right? There are 248 million acres of mm-hmm. public rangelands alone. That's not including the forest. Mm-hmm. So it's beautiful. It's vast. The thing that's difficult is in many of these locations, predominantly Arizona, Nevada, New Mexico, all those, they're under the heat dome. Climate change is slowly moving mm-hmm. its way. Climate is erratic. So things if you don't really know and you see this beautiful, big, vast expanse, you say, wow, this is amazing. But so much of our expanse is without animals. There are no animals. The biodiversity is all gone because of all the cattle, the ranching, the cattle, because of all the mining. They've destroyed, there is no wildlife on so much of the locations. So the land is dying. The land needs wildlife to grow. It's the system. So although it's amazing and incredible and beautiful in its vastness, it's degraded, and we're losing large swaths and places where animals used to roam.
Yeah, I've been there. I've driven through there quite a bit. It's a large desert, and it is like the, you know, we talk about the border fence that the government's fighting with, that keeps jaguars and other animals from migrating back and forth across much of that desert. And then I forgot to mention, one of my very first studies as an undergraduate was I did study the Black Mountain wild horse herd in California. I went and studied them, documented them, observed them. It was amazing. That was like my big senior project. So I've got skin in the game. I've got to admit, I love wild horses and their importance to.
I'm sure they have no doubt, no doubt, no doubt.
Yeah, it's part of our culture. It's our culture. You know, it's my relatives cross the plains on the backs of horses as they migrated to California.
Of course.
So what's this idea of rewilding? Because that's where rewilding now, America now, but what's the concept?
So the concept is, it's very simple. I don't know, since you have listeners all over the world, so many of your listeners will know what rewilding is, because rewilding is, this is the thing here in the Americas, we're behind. We're always the last to catch up. Rewilding Europe, rewilding Britain, all of these varying rewilding organizations all over the world, all over. You have rewilding there in New Zealand, there's rewilding in India, there's rewilding even in Africa. There, everybody, I mean, in Dubai, I read about all these places and people, Scotland, Ireland. Everybody's putting money into rewilding projects except for us here in the States. So understanding what is rewilding? Rewilding is bringing something back environmentally to an original state of being, recreating, allowing nature to recreate the system. The dirt, the grass, the phobes in the land, the insects, the small little animals, the raptors, the big birds, the herbivores, the predators. You know, it's, are you smarter than a fifth grader?
Yes.
So that's really all it is. It's sort of like saying, hey, let's take a step back and stop telling everybody where to go and what to do. What if we just let nature do it itself? What will happen? And that's what rewilding is. And all we're saying here at Rewilding America Now is don't destroy our horse herds. They're of the most valuable animal we have here. Let's let them rebuild our grasslands, put them out, let them do just what they physiologically know how to do. They eat grass, it's the way they eat the grass, not how much, how little, it's how they move. As you talked about earlier, it's their manure, passing seeds, right? They're hind gut grazers. Right. So all the seeds from the plants and things come out whole. So as they eat and pass, they're like a little machine. It goes in, it comes out, and they keep moving around. And as they do that, they keep replanting things. And as that's happening, they keep spurring grass growth, right? By chewing off the grass. Then they build all this kind of grass. Then we have little animals that come. Right? All these little animals come and make homes. And the way they eat, they open up locations for little animals to get to. Now we have these little tiny animals in the ground. Then that brings the hawks and the eagles and the scavengers, because they hunt those, you know, and then there's the way. Then the predators come, because now we have herbivores. And that's how the large packs of animals, bands, and are managed, right? Pronghorn deer and the elk and buffalo, and So it's just the system. Then we get the bees and the insects, and it's so cool
Yeah.
because horses pass manure and there's a little beetle. It's called a dung beetle.
Yep.
And so this is rewilding, and it's just a natural, easy, beautiful thing to be a part of.
One thing, because as you were talking, especially the way horses graze versus buffalo, again, larger herbivores, and then you get deer and elk to an extent, but they graze differently and they browse and they eat different plants.
Your browsers.
Yeah. So it's, we always talk about it used to be, it's a food web. And when you start taking out critical pieces of a food web, the whole thing is going to collapse. One of the classical studies now is the wolves in Yellowstone. And that was an instance where you had too many deer, not a predator in there, and the deer were shaping the ecosystem very intensely. So I don't want people to get confused because we're talking about an herbivore with horses. The horses are different in different parts of ecosystems and they graze differently and they graze on different plants. You need them all, right? You need the wolves, you need the horses, you need the bison, you need it all.
Of course, of course. Nature didn't just say, okay, you only need horses to eat grass. Exactly. Thank you so much for bringing that up. Yes, of course. And deer, right, and elk are called browsers. And I think they browse around and they don't eat as much. They're not volume eaters, and they don't do the volume that the larger herbivores like the buffalo, like the horses, like the elephant. Those are volume. Those are serious volume grass growers.
Yes. And the prairies of the day were just from
Yes.
sea to shining sea, right? That's one of our songs in the States.
Yes.
So
But why? But should we talk about why we need them to
yes.
grow grass?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So why?
Like,
Why do we
why?
need them? Yes, why? Why?
Maybe
Why do we
your
need
listeners
them?
are saying, okay, now we're growing grass. Why?
Yeah, exactly.
Well,
Why?
why do we need to grow all these things? Why do we need to recreate this biodiversity, which is the verses of all the varying animals and insects and things? These are natural systems which help manage carbon, right? Everyone's complaining about what's happening to the ozone layer in climate breakdown and climate change. Why is the weather this way? And we have little holes in the ozone, right? The carbon's poking holes in the ozone, and then the weather patterns are different. So grass plants are our best way of capturing carbon, and it captures carbon and it draws it down into the roots. And the roots are safe. The carbon is safe in the roots, in the earth, in the dirt. And when we continue to grow grass and plants and trees, and all the carbon is sequestered, which is captured into the roots of these plants, it helps with greenhouse gases because we're alleviating all this carbon in the air, these greenhouse gases, which will then slow down the eradication of our ozone, which will help to level out, right? Too much sun, too much heat, erratic weather, and climate. We need, and all of this environmental creates healthy, less diseases, right? Less pandemics coming our way. Just healthy planet, healthy earth.
No, it's and it's true. And we bring up Alan Savory because we're talking about desertification. That is an issue in the Americas where people don't realize those deserts are gaining ground. And so if you don't have the grass, you don't have the large herbivores. That desert that's in New Mexico, Arizona, Utah, Nevada is expanding, expands into California, expands, around that part of North America because you don't have a natural ecosystem. You don't have a system working. The microbes in the soil, you talk about it in the video. That's why I said, everybody, go watch that video on, I'm going to plug it again, the website, because I watched it yesterday and I mean, I had a tear in my eye. It just, you can feel the passion of everybody on this project, rewildingamericanow.org. Go watch the video. It's on YouTube. And you talking about the whole
Chris,
ecosystem. Yeah.
I want to just, sorry, I just,
yeah,
you love the video. I need to tell you, I'm so proud. I'm so honored. The video was created through the vision of a gentleman named Michael Nathanson. And Michael Nathanson is now the CEO, managing director of Rewilding America Now. He came on about 6 months ago. And the creation of this video was his vision in how to express the, but Michael was the studio chief for MGM and other large studios. So it's just such a testament to the value and importance of the work when it, when somebody like that says, wait a second, this has caught my attention and I need to tell this story.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
Yeah. Well, okay. So we talk about the importance of rewilding. Now let's talk about the fight, because it is a fight. You are fighting lobbyists. You're fighting the other side. I mean, we pop stories in every now and then. It's frustrating. Oh my goodness. I get on my soapbox all day about it. But what is the government, not only just the government, but what, I guess my first question would be, how are they managing, handling these wild horses? And like you said, they're shipping them off to slaughter. Is that still happening in 2024?
Yeah, of course. Animals go off to slaughter all the time, not just horses. I mean, there are these places here. They're called these auction houses. And they're feedlots in varying locations, right? I'm about 50 minutes outside of Manhattan. So there are ones in New Jersey, there are ones in Pennsylvania, there are ones in Texas, there are ones all over. And it's where people just dump horses and farm animals, goats. Yep. Somebody has a cow in their backyard or however that is. And you have, once an animal is delivered there, they have a week for somebody to come and buy them. They have these quote unquote auctions, for, you know, every Monday, and you bid on them $100, $200, $300, whatever it is. And whatever isn't bought or taken away gets, the kill buyers come in, they call them, and they're large trucks, right? With shippers, and they buy up everything, and then they drive them across the Canadian and Mexican borders, because we don't have horse slaughter, is illegal in this country. So they transport them over those borders and sell them for slaughter, for meat, to these slaughterhouses. And it's horrific. I mean, the journey from A to their slaughter destiny is just, in and of itself, the journey is horrifying. So yes, slaughter is real in this country. Do a lot of our wild horses that are rounded up mysteriously disappear? Are there times when there are horses that are unaccounted for that come off the range during a particular roundup? Absolutely. Can I concretely attest to the fact that I've seen the truck drive to the slaughter facility? No. But there are always advocates that are on the range that are watching and counting and are allowed to check. And, you know, there are just so many horses that they're taking off the land. They don't have enough places to keep them. And it's $120 million in federal tax money that we are paying here in this country to round up horses that stand in holding facilities. So for sure, many of them disappear in the night. Onto trucks. It's a terrible, terrible problem here. And these horses are suffering. Suffering badly.
No. What's the government's, I mean, obviously it's political winds blow left and right all the time, But what's the government's policy in the United States now with wild horses? Is it just kind of a wait and see? Because in the video, they said there was one horse in there that's been in there for 8 years, half its life.
She was born in a home.
Oh, geez. Yeah.
And never knew freedom.
No.
It was one of the gray, she was a gray mare. Yeah. She was born in holding. She never knew freedom. What is their policy? So here's the thing. They don't have a working policy.
Yeah.
Quite honestly, they don't have a working policy. My biggest complaint, there are several complaints about the government. Biggest one I have, I mean, they are supposed to work off of science. They're supposed to do environmental assessments of the land and will determine, well, the land is being taxed. We need to move horses. We need to do this. We need to not lease it out. But what happens is there is no science. There are no protocols. There are no procedures followed at all. They've got free rein. They do as they will, when they choose. And they just, there's no environmental assessments of anything. They just take the horses off. Because climate breakdown, there isn't enough grass to come back for the cattle leases. There isn't enough places. There's no grass. So they keep taking the horses away because the horses are living. Where the horses and how they manage themselves, there's grass. And the horses look amazing. So they take them off and then the cattle move in and the sheep and the leases. And, you know, at the end of the day, it's not going to matter. Because climate change is going to take care of it anyway. There's going to be, you can take all the horses off, kill all the horses, take everything away, but you're still not going to have grass because climate is, there's nothing left.
Yeah.
There's going to be nothing left. And not only no cattle, but there are no crops.
Yeah.
All the droughts and the heat domes, you know, through climate, they say world hunger is going to be the biggest issue.
Yeah.
Because we can't grow food.
Yeah. I can feel I can hear the frustration because I feel that way a lot too. It's
right. It's real people.
Yeah, you can't deny it.
Chris, it's such an easy thing. There's so many little things that everybody can do, and I just say to everybody, grow grass.
Yes.
Yeah. Grow grass. Stop mowing your lawn.
Yeah.
Put native plants and things into the backyard. We all can do things, but it's real. You don't have to have, you know, I don't want your listeners to say, okay, well, calling you up and saying, Chris, I don't have a horse. I can't do
this. No, yeah, they get it. They get it. They get it. They're very motivated to make changes. And it's just, you're right. It takes a village, right? It takes a village. And wild horses in America is one of those pieces. So how are you, is it raising awareness? Is it because you're fighting such powerful entities? Then you have state governments. The United States is so complex. It's I could feel the frustration because what happens in Idaho doesn't happen in Utah, doesn't happen in Montana, even though similar politics. But how do we fight this? Like, how do we... Is it just education or is it people? We always say vote with your dollar, you know, things we can do because companies will listen. That's why we see a lot of mega corporations alter their way of doing business because the people have spoken with their wallets and they said, no, this, we're not going to stand up for this. So what's your advice to our listeners, like how to help not just wild horses, but, and like I said, plant things in your gardens, but I mean, how do you fight all this? There's so many entities against, you know, rewilding America and wild horses. So how do you get the energy day in, day out?
So let me answer the first question.
Yeah, sorry.
I appreciate all of your questions.
Yeah.
To your listeners, what do you do?
Mm-hmm.
Well, the first thing you do is you yourself have to decide that you want to do something. You have to decide. You don't have to decide how much, but you have to say, you know what, this bothers me. And I want to do something. So you have to first make that decision. And I'm going to take a little time in my day. Everybody's busy. Time is of value. But it means enough to me for my children, for my grandchildren, for all of whatever your reasons are, that I'm going to do something. And you have to pick the one something. I'm going to, you know what? I'm going to redo my lawn. I'm going to have a conversation with my husband, and we're no longer using that cancerous fertilizer on the lawn. Okay. So I'm going to look up what I can. I'm going to figure out what it is and how to rewild my backyard. I'm going to use only organic. I'm going to use only natural, no more Roundup, no more poisonous things. I'm going to feed some birds. I mean, there are so many little things that we can do that are really everyday things. And you can be a part. You can feel like you are doing your part. Yes, you have to vote with your dollar. I have to say, vote. I always say, vote for the people that are environmentally considerate. Because being considerate of the environment really encompasses health, our health and wellness, because those things are all connected. Illness, cancers, yes, there are genetics, but so much of cancers and illnesses come from chemicals, come from outside. Our emotional and physical well-being is connected directly to the planet. When we rewild, we are helping ourselves as well. So these are the little things you can do. You need to be a voice. You need to tell people. When you go to dinner with your friends, or you're out, you're shopping, or you have lunch, or you're chatting with your husband, or you're talking to your children, you need to talk to them and you need to tell people. That's the most important thing, is spreading the awareness. It's not about how much money you have or you don't have, or how much grass you grow or you don't grow. You've got to tell people what you've learned, and you have to educate yourself. And how do I get the strength every day? I will tell you, it's 15 years, and there have been so many days that I've quit my job. I can't tell you how many days I go to bed and I say, I can't do this anymore. I'm just defeated. I'm not getting anywhere. I can't. And I wake up the next day and I realize that I can't really quit, because if I don't do this, who will?
And we've been doing this podcast. Yeah, we've been doing this podcast for 7 years, and it's not like we're getting wealthy on it. It's a passion project. And there's weeks where
if you don't do this, who will?
Yeah, exactly. You got to tell these stories. These stories are so important. It's important to every single entity living on this planet, from the microbes in the soil to all the humans and everything. So I feel it. One thing, talking about rewilding, because I don't want some of the listeners be big, you know, agriculture. I have a agriculture background. I've, you know, my dad, my family, but Alan and others are talking a lot about regenerative agriculture. Because I don't want people to think, because we need to feed the world. We, you know, like you said, world hunger is going to be a big thing with climate. There's going to be mass migrations in at the end of my lifetime, in my kids' lifetime, in my grandkids' lifetime. You're going to see peoples migrating massively out of Africa and other places. It's too hot. You can't grow food. Deserts. And, you know, there is a way to for agriculture to reestablish root systems and things like horses, horse manure, is all critical to that soil cycle. So when I think about the West or the United States, the prairies, the mass agriculture, how do we feed people without destroying our ecosystems? Is that something Rewilding America Now is looking at?
That is so easy. Yeah. So when you watch the video, a little seven minute sizzle reel, you'll see and meet Paul in our video. And we don't call, I don't like to call it regenerative grazing. I call it migratory grazing.
Yes.
Only for the fact that in nature, animals migrate. They know when, what season and when and how and where. Up, down, fall, summer, spring, you know, where they go through the natural energy, the beat of the planet. And so we need for our horses or buffalo on our grasslands, instead of rotational or regenerative, I say migratory because we need to think in a natural way, right? That they are just going to a different location and you help them to go to another location on your lands. And that's what Paul does because they grow a lot of grass. And when the crop is finished, he moves them over to the locations where the crop fields were. And they spend the winter in that location and they pass manure and they eat what's ever left and around. And sometimes you must have to subsidize some of that feed, right? But they are now in that area. So they are manure, which is nutrient rich, and all of that energy is in that location. Then comes the spring. You move them, they migrate to the different location, and now you prepare that area and that land for crop growing. And the soil is richer, and the energy of the animals have been there. And so this has been a great success and a great way to see the value. But I always represent it not in some science or term like that. I like us to think about it in that we need to follow the natural beat, the beat of the planet. So instead of whether it's all the same, but if we use the word migrational, grazing, then it maybe sets the energy up in a different way.
No, I love that term. I haven't heard. I didn't pick that up. I'm gonna watch the video again after we get done because it is that touching. But migratory grazing, and I've looked a lot into this because again, I've followed Alan's work, and you look at the root systems, and if you go to a lot of farms, the root system's a couple inches down where this regenerative agriculture, migratory, natural grasslands. I'm thinking Serengeti Plain. Mongolia, the plains of Siberia or wherever, Russia. The root systems are feet. The roots of these grasses go really, really deep. Okay. We only have a few more minutes. I want to ask you, what's the future look for wild horses? Where are we today and what does it look like? And then I'm going to come at the end and say, what can we do to help you?
The future is the future of wild horses here in the United States is bad. And quite honestly, I plan that Rewilding America Now is going to be the entity that gives large groups, bands, herds of horses a place to live, a way to be, and to change the perception of the value of horses here in this country. That they are a native species, they are an integral component to the natural system, and they are our most valued asset at this climate time. So that is my goal, and that is our hope, our mandate, and that is what we will be doing and are going to be doing to help wild horses because otherwise. There are no solutions. The government doesn't have any solutions. We are the solution. Nobody else has a solution. The government is spending millions of dollars on birth control, darting horses for birth control, which A is a terrible use of money. Birth control, the methodology doesn't always work. They can't keep proper count or track of how they're doing and who they're doing it to. Birth control doesn't always, it's not always healthy for the animals. And I'm not saying that in a proper management plan, birth control isn't necessary because it is. But it's being seen as the only solution. And as the only solution, it doesn't work. So we need help. The horses need help. We are saving the world one horse at a time. So every horse we can help is another horse to help us. And
Yeah, I remember Sinarto. He's a researcher for World Wildlife Foundation in Indonesia. He tracks like 15 days up into the mountains, sets his camera traps, treks out, comes back like a month later and collects all the data. And he said, save a tiger, save the planet. Same thing, save a horse, save the planet. And Yeah, yes. The birth control is interesting. When I was a professor and doing my science research, millions and millions of dollars from the government to fund birth control in horses. And as an equine physiologist and reproductive physiologist, it's not easy with them. You can't dart them and expect them to be. I would love to see the research behind that, because I know some of my friends that were working on it, and it was not viable. The last I knew,
I won't even tell you about some of the horrific. They were spending just millions of dollars to sterilize horses, cut nares open, to pull out their reproductive, just pull them out and sew them back up and back out. What kind of barbarism is that? And then we are paying for this.
Yes.
That's what I said to people. Did you know that your tax dollars are being spent to cut open a mare, pull out her ovaries, and sew her back up? I mean, who does that?
Yeah, the American public won't stand for it. They just need knowledge, right? We need to shine a light in the darkness.
People need to know this.
Yes. So you wrote a book. No. I'm right there with you. I'm right next to you. You wrote a book real quick. Want to talk about that real quick? What's it about?
Sure. Yeah.
Born to Rewild. Yes.
So I wrote the book about 2 years ago. It was really fun. And I didn't write it because, the world needs another book about another person, another story to read. I wrote it because I kept saying to myself, okay, I need people to know. I need people to know. We need a lot of people to know, right? Mm-hmm. I need to become a bestseller so a lot of people know. Because if I believe in my soul, if the American people know what's happening to these horses and the money that's being spent on them and the mismanagement of their public rangeland, because people don't know anything. And you don't have to like horses. You don't have to want to do anything with horses. But if you just don't want your money misspent this way, right? Mm-hmm. And your taxes. If people knew, they would stand up and say no.
Yeah.
So I wrote a book, and the book is my journey. It's my journey of exploration and growth and how I became who I am and why I'm doing what I'm doing. And it's just so everybody can get the information about what's happening to the horses, why that matters. Like, why does that affect you? And why you can do something yourself.
Yeah. Well, for all the I was just going to say, we get a lot of young people. I just had an interview with a student. I spent 30 minutes with her talking about, she's asking me, like, how do I break in? How do I get into conservation? So you read a book like the one you have. And for our young listeners, it just shows you the journey and how you could become an activist and become Amanda Kellerman and make a difference, because you are making a difference. We sometimes don't see it when you're in your shoes, but you are making a difference. You are a strong, powerful voice for these horses and rewilding America now. Where can our listeners learn more? Besides the website, is there other places, social media, that they can follow? And
of course. So the website, rewildingamericanow.org, has lots of information. Follow us, TikTok, Instagram, Facebook, of things like that. But please go to the website. We have an info. If you have questions or thoughts or ideas, I always want to know what you think. I always want to know if you have good ideas that can help with us. I'd love for everyone to get a book. If you'd like to have the book, I have lots of books. Please send me an info. I know it's on Amazon, but I would love to send them to you myself. You can go on the website, send me an info. Tell me that you heard and learned about this on the podcast, and I'm happy to send you a book if I can get it to you where you are in the world, right?
Yeah. That's awesome. Well, thank you so much, Amanda. I am going to keep following this story and see where it goes, and maybe we can have you back on in a year or two, because I think, like you said, rewilding in Europe, it's a big thing. They're putting beavers back out. They're putting bison back out in the UK. Scotland, they're putting species back. Europe's doing it. Africa, obviously, and Asia. And you're like, the Americas, like, what? We have such I live in New Zealand now, but back home in the States, such diverse and incredible species, and they're all slipping away through our fingertips.
I know. So I want to leave you with two things, because I know we have to go, is one, please keep up with us. We have an amazing project that is launching in the next month in Idaho, something that's never been happened here in the United States before, a true rewilding project of wild nature, just like rewilding Europe and every other place over there. So please keep track of us. And we have a new link on our website with it's Meet the Scientists, and our Dr. Ross McPhee is putting out all kinds of information to help educate everybody. So please take a read, join us. And once again, Chris, you're incredible. You are just incredible for all the animals and the work
Thank you. And yeah, it's well, thank you for what you do and shining a light on this. People need to know, and especially, you know, I know back in the States, if the public, they wouldn't stand for it. So keep it up. Keep doing the fight. Those nights when you get those wobbles, because Angie and I get those wobbles, we're like, kids and school and teaching and all these other commitments. Just get up the next day and say, okay, I'm going to make a difference. I'm going to make the world better for everybody. So thank you. Thank you, Amanda. And this flew by. I blinked my eyes and I was like, oh my goodness, we got to go. So, but thank you. Thank you for taking the time to speak to me and our listeners.
Thank you for having me.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.